From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, April 11th, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
A Republican lawmaker from central Maine sparked outrage late Wednesday when he suggested that the mass shooting in Lewiston was God's punishment for expanding access to abortion. Kevin Miller has more.
Representative Michael Lemelin of Chelsea had already drawn objections for suggesting that a bill dealing with abortion and transgender care was evil and influenced by the devil. But Lemelin shocked many in the chamber when he said that recent damaging storms and last October's mass shooting that left 18 dead were God's response to a new law lifting restrictions on abortion performed later in a pregnancy.
Keep in mind that the law came into effect on October 25th. God heard you. And the horrible events on October 25th happened.
Democrats immediately objected, and after conferring with other legislative leaders and the House clerk, Speaker Rachel Talbot Ross ruled Lemelin out of order for violating the decorum of the House chamber.
The chair finds if the member continues to make comments in this manner, the member will continue to be out of order and additional steps will be taken.
One other lawmaker, Republican Representative Shelley Rudnicki of Fairfield, defended Lemelin by telling her House colleagues that she agreed with everything he said. But multiple lawmakers from both sides of the aisle condemned the comments. Representative Rachel Henderson of Rumford said Lemelin's fire and brimstone rhetoric were contrary to her own deeply held religious beliefs.
But tonight, I am not proud to be a Republican. I am not proud to have an R in front of my name. It was reprehensible. And if anyone in this body or under the sound of my voice ever wants to feel the love of God, you can come speak to me.
The House voted 80-70, largely along party lines, to pass the bill, which would protect medical professionals in Maine who care for patients who come to the state to receive abortion or gender-affirming care that they cannot receive in their home state. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
And the fallout from those remarks continued on Thursday when both representatives were censured by the House of Representatives. As Steve Missler reports, both legislators had been sanctioned by House Speaker Rachel Talbot Ross, who yanked their ability to vote and speak on the House floor until they formally apologized.
The censure vote against Republican Representatives Mike Lemelin of Chelsea and Shelley Rudnicki of Fairfield was unanimous and came after leaders in both parties haggled over the wording and manner of their atonement. After the censure vote, Speaker Talbot Ross called both lawmakers to the well of the House to verbally condemn their conduct. The lawmakers then returned to their seats to read their apologies from the House floor. Rudnicki grew tearful reading hers, while Lemelin delivered his this way.
I accept full responsibility for my remarks on the House floor on the evening of April 10th. I publicly apologize to my colleagues in the House, the people connected to the horrible events of October 25th, and to the state of Maine.
The Speaker had described both lawmakers' remarks as extremely offensive and intentionally harmful, and that they had violated a rule governing legislator decorum. Lemelin's remarks came during debate over a bill that would shield out-of-state abortion and transgender care patients from prosecution in their home state. He had already drawn objections for suggesting that the bill was evil, but he later went further by suggesting that God had beset the Lewiston gunmen on innocent people as they played pool, cornhole, and bowled on October 25th, the same day that an abortion expansion law went into effect. While Lemelin was condemned by lawmakers in both parties during the debate, Rudnicki rose to say that she agreed with his comments. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
On Thursday, the independent commission investigating the Lewiston shootings questioned U.S. Army Reserve Captain Jeremy Reamer about what actions he did and didn't take after fellow reservist Robert Card made threats of violence and was hospitalized for psychosis. Card would later shoot to death 18 people in Lewiston. As Patty White reports, Reamer admitted that he did not follow through on all of his obligations as unit commander.
It was Captain Reamer who ordered Robert Card to go to a hospital for a mental health evaluation last July. Card was at a training in New York at the time with fellow reservists. He locked himself in a room after getting into a fight and accusing others of calling him a pedophile. Card was ultimately hospitalized for 2 weeks for psychosis. He was supposed to attend follow-up appointments, as called for in his discharge papers. But when commission member Toby Dilworth asked Reamer whether he checked to see if Card was complying, Reamer said he faced limitations.
It is difficult to answer your question. It is difficult to do in the Army Reserve capacity.
Reamer explained that unlike active duty, where there's unlimited access to unit members, reservists go back to the civilian world. This was the beginning of a tense 3 hours of questioning. It was Reamer's second appearance before the commission, and this time members had emails, text messages, and other documents to inform their questions. Dilworth asked Reamer about a counseling form sent to his email that ordered Card to make regular contact with the case management team and update Reamer about his case.
Did you do anything to enforce the order?
I did not.
Reamer explained his email was down at the time, and he didn't discover the message until after the Lewiston shootings. Commission members also pressed Reamer about efforts to remove firearms from Card's home, which was recommended after his medical evaluation. Reamer told the commission that he didn't have jurisdiction over personal firearms. Instead, he said Card's friend and fellow reservist, Sean Hodgson, was coordinating to remove firearms with Card's family.
We understood that that was the plan. Okay. To have the family remove the firearms.
To this day, do you know whether the firearms were ever removed from Card's house?
I do not.
In September, Hodgson texted Reamer to say that he believed Card had guns in his car and that he was threatening to shoot up the reserve unit in Saco. That prompted Reamer to ask the Saginaw County Sheriff's Office to conduct a well-being check on Card. Commission members suggested that type of request downplayed the situation, and they questioned why he didn't ask for Card to be taken into custody.
Because I would not dictate how a police do their job. I requested that they do a check well-being, expecting them to do their job. I would not tell them how to do their job.
Reamer was ultimately asked to reflect whether he would do anything differently with the sheriff's office. He said, looking at it through the lens he had at the time, not knowing that Card would go on to kill 18 people, he stands by his actions.
So I don't necessarily think I would have changed anything because I relied on the local law enforcement to do their job.
Which prompted this response from commission member Ellen Gorman.
You have said on a couple of occasions that you expected the law enforcement here in Maine to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Was it your job to complete the developmental counseling form?
That was a requirement of me, yes.
Did you do that?
I did not.
And was it your job to ensure that Card followed through with the mental health treatment that he had been ordered to comply with by the Army?
Was to supervise and to follow up with that, yes.
That was your job?
It's part of my job, yes.
Did you do that?
After a long pause, Reamer answered that he did not. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
In other news, nurses in Maine are urging passage of a bill that would limit the number of patients they tend to each day. The Maine State Nurses Association demonstrated outside Portland's Maine Medical Center on Thursday, asking Governor Mills for her support on the Maine Quality Care Act. Emma Cooper is a registered nurse in postpartum care at the hospital. She says the current staffing system stretches nurses thin, making them feel unable to provide patients with proper care.
It is the deep, devastating pain of being a person who cares, who knows what needs to happen for someone and being unable to do it simply because you are too busy with other patients. It's causing nurses, like myself, to not only leave the bedside, but to also be saddled with unimaginable trauma and distress, causing things like depression and PTSD.
Cooper's mother is State Senator Stacey Brenner of Cumberland, the bill's original sponsor. Maine Senate voted to approve the bill in late March. It awaits action in the House. Members of Maine's congressional delegation are among those blasting a decision by the United States Postal Service to consolidate services at its facility in Hamden and move some operations to southern Maine. The Postal Service announced the decision this week, saying that consolidating and shifting outgoing mail operations from Hamden to Scarborough will lead to, quote, faster and more reliable mail and package delivery over a greater geographic area. But Scott Adams, the president of American Postal Workers Workers United, Local 458, says the plan is likely to only cause unnecessary mail delays that could affect everything from medicine to absentee ballots.
So when you talk about ballots, you talk about medication, you talk about bills, any delay that's unnecessary is just, it's wrong.
Congressman Jared Golden has introduced a bill to freeze the consolidation plan and require more oversight. The Postal Service says the Hamden facility will receive more than $12 million in new investments and will stay open as a local processing center co-located with a sorting and delivery center. And the Maine Supreme Judicial Court has reinstated the manslaughter conviction of Mark Cardilli Jr. of Portland. Cardilli was charged with murder for the killing of Isahak Musa, his sister's black boyfriend, in 2019. Superior Court Judge Nancy Mills, hearing the case, found Cardilli guilty of the lesser charge of manslaughter. Cardilli appealed, arguing his attorney failed to include one of his self-defense arguments in a closing memo to the judge hearing the case. Another judge, John O'Neill, heard the appeal. Judge O'Neill agreed Cardilli's attorneys, quote, did not have a cohesive trial strategy, and their performance fell below the objective standard of reasonableness. He ordered a new trial and freed Cardilli on bail. The state appealed, and today the Supreme Court justices agreed the attorneys did a poor job, but found the facts ruled out a successful self-defense claim. As a result, they reinstated Cardilli's conviction. He still has about half of a 7.5-year prison term to serve. The Environmental Protection Agency announced yesterday new limits for 6 forever chemicals in drinking water. The new standards are more strict than Maine's current limit of 20 parts per trillion. And as Caitlin Bedayan reports, the new standards could affect water supplies across Maine.
The EPA announced final regulations setting drinking water limits for 5 PFAS compounds. The 2 most common chemicals, PFOA and PFOS, are limited to 4 parts per trillion, with a non-enforceable goal of 0, which is meant to indicate that any amount has negative health impacts. 3 other chemicals, PFNA, PFHXS, and Gen X, will each have a limit of 10 parts per trillion. Advocates in Maine and around the country, including Sarah Woodbury of Defend Our Health, say the regulations mark a major milestone.
So with these lower standards, so many more people in the state of Maine will have clean drinking water. It's an incredible win for public health.
The regulations instruct public water systems to begin testing for PFAS in the next 3 years and make those results available to the public. Water systems that test over the new limits must address the contamination by 2029. The EPA also announced nearly $1 billion in funds for states to help test and treat public water supplies and private wells. Woodbury says that's important for Maine, where many residents have private wells and often have to cover maintenance costs themselves. But the limits come too late for those who have been drinking contaminated water and suffering the harmful health impacts, says Dana Callahan with the National Community Action Group Slingshot.
In many ways, this, ruling is late. There are many, many people who have lost their lives to, health impacts that are linked to exposure to PFAS contamination.
In 2021, Maine passed an interim drinking water standard of 20 parts per trillion. Unlike the new EPA limits, Maine's standard was not set for individual chemicals, but for the total presence of 6 compounds. Since then, the state has begun testing wells for PFAS and has directed municipal water systems to test as well. But with the new stricter limits from the EPA, Callahan says some of these systems will be out of compliance.
So this will trigger action steps that communities across the state will have to take to provide clean drinking water for Mainers.
That includes the Greater Augusta Utility District, where General Manager Brian Tarbuck says tests of the district's Riverside Station last year found 4.66 parts per trillion of PFOA, well under the Maine standard, but now just over the EPA limit. Tarbuck says the regulation is not surprising, and that the district is already in the process of testing a filtration system.
So knowing that we were above 4 in a couple of our tests, we said, well, we got to jump on this now, before everybody else needs the same pilot systems that we need right now.
Tarbuck says it's difficult to estimate how much a filtration system will cost the district to install and maintain. But the only other option is to stop using the well entirely.
You know, one thing that our board could choose to do is say, you know, it's going to be so expensive to do this, maybe we'll just abandon the wells. And that's, unfortunately, a decision that I think a lot of folks may be faced with.
There are two chemicals, PFHPA and PFDA, that are listed under Maine's PFAS limits, but not the EPA's. Sarah Woodbury of Defend Our Health says she wants the state to keep the 20 parts per trillion standard for those compounds in place. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Bedayan.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Friday morning, we'll discuss the role of art in community healing. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.